Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
All right. So let's get started. All right. So I have no disclosures to report. So 2003 was coined the year of the human genome as it marked the 50th anniversary for when Watson and Crick deduced the structure of DNA, which obviously we all know had a big impact. And the New York Times wrote an article about it and how DNA changed the world. But our question was, now what? So how do we translate gene discovery to improve health outcomes? And we know research continues along a translational continuum. So we have the bench lab work, which leads to gene discovery, which is then transferred to the bedside care. So we have genetic testing, which has improved health outcomes, preferably personalized recommendations, which has public health ramifications. But what's missing here are the ethical, legal, and social issues between genetic testing and improved health outcomes. So in 2008, President Obama put out the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and we applied. And in 2009, we were funded by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute of NIH to examine the ethical, legal, and social issues that arise in the translation of cardiogenetic knowledge to clinical practice for families who have experienced a sudden, unexpected death. So here's our center. We're in the Bronx. It's a state-of-the-art children's hospital. We have an interdisciplinary team between Albert Einstein College of Medicine and Yeshiva University. So we have psychologists, ethicists, genetic counselor, adult and pediatric cardiologists, and geneticists, along with the researchers, of course. So findings in cardiogenetics have led to clear examples of life-saving personalized recommendations that can be implemented to save lives in families that have experienced a sudden unexpected death in an adult, which is SUDS, and SIDS, which is sudden infant death syndrome. So SIDS occurs within the first year of life. The prevalence is about 54 per 100,000 births, and about 10% of SIDS are associated with a genetic mutation. SUDS, on the other hand, is characterized by ages of 1 through 35. The prevalence is really unknown, and about 50% of SUDS experiences are associated with death, genetic mutation, sorry. So a wide variety of mutations in multiple genes have been identified that are responsible for inherited death syndromes. And collectively, these disorders are called cardiac channelopathies and include long QT syndrome. So long QT in general is consisted of passing out. You can have a fainting, syncopal episode, which can lead to sudden cardiac arrest. And the prolonged QT interval can be seen on an EKG. So the incidence is about 1 per 2,500, so it is rare. It can be caused by mutations in genes that form potassium and sodium channels. Mutations are inherited, and different mutations cause different types of long QT syndrome. And again, on an EKG, you'll see the prolonged QT interval, and here is a visual. So here on the left, we see the QT interval that's normal, and the B on the right is a prolonged QT. So it's interesting to note that long QT syndrome is triggered from results of gene-environment interactions. So these are the three most common types of LQT. I believe there are 13 in total. So as we can see here, LQT1 is triggered by exercise, LQT2 by loud noises, emotions that can startle someone, and LQT is triggered by three. LQT3 is triggered mostly by sleep. So this has major implications on personalized medicine. So for example, if someone comes in with a strong family history of, let's say, syncopal episodes, and the provider thinks that LQT may be in the family, genetic testing may be performed, which will result in the gene mutation that gives us the LQT subtype, and then personalized recommendations. So the provider, let's say the person that shows up and it's LQT1, so the provider will then prescribe a beta blocker and maybe tell the patient to avoid competitive sports. So we asked subjects to participate in this research to determine their subjective experiences with a life-threatening disease and how genetic testing played a role. We had three recruitment sources. The first was Montefiore Einstein Center for Cardiogenetics in the Bronx. The second was Sudden Unexplained Death in Childhood, which is based out of New Jersey. And the third was Sudden Arrhythmia Death Syndromes Foundation, which is based out of Utah. So we had 50 participants, and all participants had either a cardiac problem themselves, a relative with a cardiac problem, or experienced the sudden death of a family member. This research was a qualitative approach design, so that consisted of 1 to 2 hour unstructured interviews. All interviews were audio recorded and transcribed, and then what happened was three independent coders underlined all of the text, organized the findings into repeating ideas, and then contextualize them into bigger themes. So here are the themes listed, and we will go into further detail now. So the first theme was difficulty understanding. A lot of our participants had issues with understanding the information. So one woman said, "I don't know what LQT means. You gotta explain to me. Talk to me in plain English." Another woman said, "Every time I go into the hospital, I'm so nervous. They might be telling me exactly what it is, but it's just not going in there." And then this last woman, so what we found was written information helped a lot of people understand. So this woman says, "They gave me written information about LQT. They did a great job of explaining." Then there was another theme, ambivalence versus desire for testing. So is it ambivalence or is it going to be empowering getting this genetic testing result? So one woman said, "It's like you want to know and then you don't want to know, because when you know it's scary and when you don't know it's still scary." Another woman said, "I'd rather know because that way I can have caution and prevent it from happening." And a third woman said, "I'm very relieved that I know what it is." Another theme that we saw was effects on family within sharing the information between family members, because this is inherited, guilt of passing it on to their children, and worrying about the next generation. So here's a mother talking to her 7-year-old daughter saying, "Your heart takes a little bit longer to restart than most people's, so they want to give you this," pointing to an ICD, "so if something happens, you'll be okay." Another woman said, "I have a lot of guilt. I'm raising this child, and I didn't know she had a heart problem. I don't feel guilty that she had it, because no one could prevent that." And a third woman said, "The grandchildren don't have it. Thank God for that." There's also children witnessing problems and then constant monitoring. So what we saw was one woman said, "I think that's what got my sister more afraid, because her two little kids were right there watching her go through this." Constant monitoring had a lot of scary implications. So one woman said, "I'm exhausted because I have to stay up until 11 because that's her last dose for the day." And another woman said, "I'm so scared to sleep with her because she shakes a little bit, so I'm always waking her up and asking, 'Are you okay?'" Free-floating anxiety was another dominant theme. One woman said, "I got anxiety. I just didn't want to face the fact that I was different." A man said, "When you hear something about your heart, it's scary because the heart and the brain are two things you can't live without." And another woman said, "I'm always concerned that this might be the day." That's, of course, referring to her death. There's also a lot of desire for standardization among medical examiners, hospitals, and ERs. So in the medical examiner arena, we have a woman saying, "Emmy didn't really grasp that she was dealing with the murder of a dead child, with the mother of a dead child. She was blunt, to the point, and off the phone." Another woman said, "It was like a black hole. You had no idea what they were doing." In terms of a hospital, one woman had this to say, "I would have liked someone to walk with you, explain the test, tell you whom to call." And she also went on to say, "I got so many cards from so many doctors, it was so confusing. Who do I call?" In the ER, the same woman said, "You didn't know where to turn. I almost feel that in the hospital ER, there should be something. Even at that point, we were so incredibly lost." So another theme was interactions with medical professionals. This happened with the negative side and a positive side. So the negative was, one man said, "Finally, the pediatrician said it was psychosomatic." This refers to a family that it was diagnostic odyssey. He's referring to his daughter. The pediatrician said it was psychosomatic, and then years later, it turned out that it was long QT syndrome. A woman said, it was kind of like a roller coaster. You do, you don't, you do, you don't. And then another woman said, they could never duplicate the abnormal EKG, but felt he had Brugada. They said we should not wait for the genetic test to come back. He needs an ICD. There has been absolutely no activity on the ICD, but he had two seizures. It was a misdiagnosis. What we think was horribly wrong was that there was no neurological test done on him. So clearly there's a void in the with the medical professionals. But we did have some positive feedback as well. One woman said, he was very helpful. The medical examiner mentioned that he would be willing to help us go through the process, the paperwork, the directives to the right areas as far as genetic testing. And another woman said, the level of sensitivity of the people that I've met has been the key. They don't make you feel stigmatized like you've got the plague. They explain it in language as much as you can understand it. Another theme was benefits to self. One woman said, our son has turned out to be a very sensitive and caring person as a result of the death of his older sister because he learned how to comfort people in distress. And another woman said, I restarted my positive. Even now, my daughter teaches me how to live life as a result of losing her. The final theme was advocacy as a way of coping. One woman said, I was in hot pursuit to educate and create awareness. I spent a lot of time speaking and teaching and published an article in EMS magazine. And finally, I wanted to promote awareness and started a foundation. I do fundraising, and I'm going to sponsor a health fair and promote EKGs for children. So that was one way people were coping. So in response to the feedback we received, we developed fact sheets, which are in English and Spanish, just describing long QT syndrome. So here's, well, part of one, just describes the syndrome. And then we also created a what cardiology tests will I have fact sheet with pictures to address low literacy. And these can be shared among people, family members, so that when the family member needs to go for a test, they have some sort of basis of what they're going for. And we piloted these with some participants as we started developing them, and we found that they all really, really liked these fact sheets. They had something to refer to when they went back home. They could call up their doctor and ask more questions, and they could share it with their family members. And that's it. Thank you.